It is that time of year. We are looking ahead to the NFL draft, the state of some of the teams picking in the top 10, why Cleveland and San Francisco are nice landing spots for young QBs, Myles Garrett's impact for the Browns, what the Panthers need to return to form, all that and so much more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I'm Gary Gramling. I'm here with Andy Benoit. Andy, we're in that sort of in-betweenish time right now. Free agency has, I'm going to declare, it is officially over. No one of note is out there. Not even Adrian Peterson. He's no longer on my radar. But we're not quite into draft madness, so we're gonna do a little bit of in-betweenish thing. We're gonna look towards the draft, and we're gonna see who has what to do between now and then.
Yeah, we're just gonna talk football, and wherever it goes is where it goes today.
It is. Just full disclaimer, we said beforehand, this is gonna be like a Phish concert. It's gonna be like a long 45-minute solo here. So buckle in for this. But let's start right at the top. The Cleveland Browns, they're going to have two picks in the top 12. They obviously own the number one overall pick. Full rebuild here. They added some guys in free agency. We've sort of criticized them for losing Terrell Pryor. But right now, Andy, when you look at this team, let's be positive. What do the Browns have to build around?
Ooh, boy, the offensive line would be the thing you start with. That's where their strength is on offense and really their whole team. And that's positive because if you have an offensive line, then in theory you can run a full playbook. You don't have to worry about getting the ball out quickly. You can do a lot of different run game concepts. You don't have to be one-dimensional in the running game. And so you have all opportunities available to help your lesser-talented skill players. And they will have lesser talented skill players there in Cleveland. They're not going to go out and get six new guys who can touch the ball between now and the start of the season. So the O-line gives them a fighting chance. Hugh Jackson's obviously a very good designer of offense, so that helps. If we're talking about, like, okay, what do the Browns need to move forward? How can they get this turned around as soon as possible? Because we realize it's a long game, but you need to start winning, too. Winning builds on winning, and I think that shifts the discussion over to defense and really improving that defense.
Yeah, and look, they're going to take Myles Garrett first overall unless someone bowls them over with a trade offer, which is highly unlikely in a year that has no sort of surefire quarterback at the top of the draft. So, you know, they're going to get that guy who's an edge presence. I mean, Garrett's a guy who's, I don't want to say Jadeveon Clowney because he's a different style of player, but he's like Clowney in that sort of almost unrealistic, hard-to-believe blend of size and athleticism. He's just a little more of an edge guy, whereas Clowney is sort of a guy who's a little bit better kicking inside.
Yep.
I mean, how much does that cover up for their deficiencies? Because their secondary is in pretty good shape, so you add a good edge guy, and then you got the start of something there.
Well, I think an edge rusher is the fastest way to turn around a defense because those are the guys that make the offense play on your schedule. Those are the disruptors. And the Browns don't have any edge presence at all. They've drafted some guys last year, Emmanuel Ogba, Carl Nassib in the third round. Ogba was a second rounder. Those are more they're defensive tackles. They play defensive end, but their skill set is that of a D tackle. The Browns had no one who could threaten the edge. So Garrett, they're lucky in Cleveland in that their biggest need happened to correlate with the guy who's the best in this draft, or appears to be the best in this draft. Garrett fills their biggest need. I differ with you on the secondary, though, Gary. I think the safety position is every bit as big a need for the Browns just because they were so actively bad there last year. And they had to rotate guys, missed tackles, and poor run fits were a huge problem. They didn't have any playmakers in pass D. And that's kind of exacerbating the issue. Of course, the lack of pass rush is going to exacerbate that.
Yeah.
But they're not particularly deep at cornerback either. Joe Hayden, let's say he can regain what he was before. That helps. He's a true number one. Jamar Taylor's a really good slot guy at this point. That's all they have. So they're good at starting corner, but they're not deep and they're bad at safety. And I think those are where we're going to see their second, third, fourth round picks go.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'd say this, and it's all relative because it is not a good defense, but I feel like the strength of the defense is the cornerbacks, and it's not deep, but they have guys who can play there at least. So, I mean, I don't know. I guess that's sort of not where you start if you're them, though. I feel like it's got to be all in that front seven, and you sort of say, you know, these are the guys we have at cornerback, and then you just cross your fingers and hope they stay healthy this year.
Well, so they have three guys that I think could play. Jamar Taylor, we just said, from the slot. He found his home in the slot last year. He's not an outside. He can play outside, but he got his contract extension because of what he did in the slot. Joe Hayden can still play. He's not a true shadow number one type of guy anymore. He hasn't been, but maybe he could be that again. And then the only other one that I see that would make sense on the field is Brian Body Calhoun, who's a perimeter cornerback. He was very good against downfield passes outside, so he needs the sideline to help him. But when he had that last season, there was a lot to like. Now, he's young. He's not super talented. So I think if a great corner were to fall to them, let's say someone they thought was a mid-first-round pick is there at the very beginning of the second round, I think Cleveland would pull the trigger on that guy.
It's a deep group of cornerbacks. I'll certainly say that. They'll get a good guy in the second or third round if they want to go that direction. What did you think of Jamie Collins in this defense last year? We talked so much about Jamie Collins when he got traded and what it meant for the Patriots and what it was going to mean going forward for the Patriots, and I feel like we never really discussed what does Jamie Collins mean for the Browns, because he's going to be in Cleveland for a while.
Well, he played outside in their base packages, and they've kind of a big deal was made of that, because in New England he was a stack linebacker. So I know Chris Collinsworth on the Thursday night game when the Browns played the Ravens, for example, kind of hinted that it's not the best spot to play Collins. But understand, your base packages, first of all, they didn't have a lot of other guys around him, so someone has to play there. And then your base packages, you only play about 30% of the time. Really, your base is your nickel anymore. And Collins was a stack linebacker at nickel, so he played in the middle of the field. He lined up behind the defensive tackles, as that's what a stack backer does. And he's very athletic in that position. He can change directions east and west very fluidly. He's fast. He goes from 0 to 60 well. So he's a great athlete. Is he a thinker of the game? Probably not. And he's going to be a little bit undisciplined at times. But if you have the right guys around you, you can survive that way. And more than survive, you can really thrive that way. So I think they got what they want in Collins. It's a matter of fitting the players around him and really identifying exactly what is our scheme going to be. That's the other thing we need to, we don't have to talk about here now, but we have to keep in mind they have a new defensive coordinator too, Gary, and Greg Williams. And he does things a little differently. He's a lot more diverse, especially in his third down packages. So it remains to be seen how are all these players going to be used.
I'm going to switch you over to the offense side of the ball one more time before we move on from Cleveland here. They're going to take Garrett first overall. They have that number 12 pick. You have Cody Kessler. Cody Kessler is probably not, well, he's definitely not a guy you're going to look at and say like, well, this is our guy. We're going to try and build around him. But what do you see Kessler as? Is he a potential bridge guy? Is he just is he just going to be a backup? Is he sort of a Matt McGloin-ish type of body for this franchise?
Yeah, I think he's a backup. I that's what I see him as. He did some okay things last year. There were times that I know the Browns felt he left throws on the field at times, meaning guys were open and he didn't throw to them, didn't see them, wasn't comfortable, whatever it was. Watching Kessler last year, at no point did I feel like, hey, the Browns might have something here. I didn't think he was bad, but I didn't feel like, oh, hey, there's a hidden gem to uncover here.
All right, and I'm gonna throw this out here now, because this is the quote that Mitchell Trubisky now gave to Emily Kaplan a couple of months ago when she was out there in Carolina. But I root for Cleveland everything. I love where I'm from, no matter what. Everyone still believes in the Browns, and that's so cool. It's different being from there. Nobody knows why we love Cleveland so much unless you're from there. Look, you spent some time with Trubisky, Andy. Is this a guy you would sort of peg as a worthwhile developmental guy? I mean, all these guys are developmental guys this year, all these quarterbacks. Is he a guy who stands out to you as a guy who maybe two or three years down the road, he got something with him?
Oh, that is so hard to project with any player, because we've gone over a few times, Gary, in the last few weeks, how different the college game is than the NFL game. And that's why teams miss on draft picks, because they're trying to project one guy from one game to another game. Trubisky is a good athlete. I think the arm is good enough. I wasn't wowed by it, but I think it's good enough, and good enough means good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what will he be from the pocket? I thought he looked great from the pocket in what I saw. I went over the Stanford game very closely with him, which was his last game as a pro, his bowl game. I know Greg Cosell, though, for example, at NFL Films, who watches a lot more of this stuff and has been translating guys from college to the pros for many years, so he watches more of these draft guys than I do. He feels differently about Trubisky, and he thinks there were times that he left the pocket needlessly, which suggests you're going to need time to develop that, and you don't always know if that can be developed. So I don't know. I struggle with that. I liked him. Personally, I could see why people would think he comes across as inexperienced, because he is inexperienced and he's young. Yeah. He's clearly still learning the game, and it's just a matter of what the Browns feel about that. What I would ask you, Gary, you mentioned Trubisky. He loves Cleveland. Should that factor in at all if you're the Browns and making a decision? And the analyst in me says no, but the human side of me says you got a guy that really, really wants to be here, and we're a team that people probably don't want to be on right now. Does that factor in at all for the Browns if they're deciding what to do about Trubisky?
The only reason I'd say it factors in is because you're looking at five guys, and you're basically looking at five guys who are lottery tickets here. So it's like, you know, it's a tiebreaker if you think all those guys are, you know, sort of equally likely to become your franchise quarterback, and or unlikely if you want to take the pessimistic side of it. But I mean, look, they did that with Brady Quinn a couple years ago, and that didn't work out so well. And I should point out, look, DeShone Kizer, some people have pointed out he is also an Ohio guy, and how come he's not called the hometown guy? Because he's from Toledo, and Toledo is not Cleveland. Mentor, Ohio is 15 miles from Cleveland. Toledo, Ohio is 115 miles from Cleveland. So that's that whole thing.
All right.
But, I mean, if you're looking at the five guys and saying, we don't know what's going on here, and the five, I mentioned five, and it would be Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, DeShone Kizer, and Davis Webb. I like Nathan Peterman as the sixth guy, but no one else seems to, so I will put one foot off that bandwagon.
So you're saying Trubisky hometown factor is to be analyzed as a tie-breaking factor, and only that for the brand. And I would agree with that. So
If you're throwing your hands up and just saying, we don't know which guy to take, fine, take the guy who wants to be in Cleveland.
Yeah, and you're probably not doing that if you have your pick of all the quarterbacks.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not. But, you know, like, hey, look, we talk Dak Prescott all the time. I thought the best quote we had last year, Kaplan had done a piece with Ron Wolf and sort of the art of drafting quarterbacks. And Ron Wolf's thing was always, I'm going to draft a quarterback every year. And his thing wasn't, you know, I'm going to draft a quarterback every year because I'm so good at identifying quarterbacks. He was saying, I drafted a quarterback every year because you have no idea what these guys are until they are in your building. And it's total guesswork. And we ended up with Matt Hasselbeck, and we ended up with Mark Brunell because we guessed and we brought him in, and then we said, oh, okay, we have something here. And that's really the way it goes with this stuff.
Those were not guys that were drafted high at all.
No.
So when Ron Wolf is saying, I'm going to draft a quarterback, he's not meaning using your first, second, third, even fourth or fifth round picks. I take it the meaning of that, because I've always wondered what coaches – actually mean by that. It came from Bill Walsh. He was the one that started it, and Bill Walsh obviously carries some credence around the NFL still to this day. And I never quite understood it. Like, if you're the Indianapolis Colts, are you really going to draft a quarterback this year? Because that's what we say we're supposed to do. But Ron Wolf's point, I'm assuming he means that you just have to acquire one somewhere, somehow. Do you even have to draft them? I mean, what if you want to sign a rookie quarterback?
Well, presumably you're going to be the pickings get slimmer and slimmer as you go through. But yeah, I mean that's the concept. If you want to get a priority free agent, you can do that too. But I guess the point is, and I always say this with the Texans, my biggest criticism of the Texans isn't that they didn't use a first-round pick on a quarterback. They used no picks on quarterbacks, and they just, you know, they had Savage sort of sitting around, and then they had to spend the money on Osweiler, but they never brought in a guy, or I should say a second guy after Savage, to sort of develop as their potential, you know, maybe this guy is gonna be the guy who can basically manage the offense at this point.
I thought one of the most interesting articles we've had on the MMQB so far in 2017 was Albert Breer's column last week, where coaches around the league, and you hear about this all the time, and Breer is the first one to write about it within the context of the upcoming collective bargaining agreement. Coaches around the league don't have time to develop these young guys anymore. The practices have been so scaled back in terms of quantity and even quality, because you can only do so many things in practice now, that there just simply isn't time, and it's starting to hurt the league, was Breer's point and a lot of coaches' points, because you're not getting these developmental guys, and the quarterback position is the most difficult one of all to deal with in that regard.
Yeah, and yeah, let's transition to I want to talk about Christian Hackenberg for a moment, because Breer actually reported a couple weeks ago, don't be surprised if Hackenberg is in the running to be the starter in New York, with Josh McCown being the presumed veteran placeholder there. But you know, when they took Hackenberg a year ago, and Jenny Brentes had done a piece on Hackenberg in the lead up to the draft, and everyone she spoke to basically said, well, yeah, this guy's, he's a second or third round prospect, but he can't play this year. He can't play in 2016. You're looking at least 2 years, maybe three, before you can get him on the field. So he's a long-term prospect. And you know, the Jets being the Jets, and the Jets fans being Jets fans, they all sort of went crazy when he didn't play this year. And he was branded a bust because he didn't get on the field this year. Now, I think I feel like I'm like one of the biggest Hackenberg apologists in media, but I think he's intriguing enough that I'd like to see what happens two or three years down the line with him. I don't necessarily think he's going to be good, but I'd be interested to see what he becomes. When you're looking at the guys in this draft class this year, I mean, across the league, everyone's saying there is not a guy who can run your offense day one. I think Bruce Arians ended up saying there, I think there's one guy who could step in and play day one, and he wouldn't specify which one of those guys. But I mean, that's just kind of, it's almost like that's how it worked, I feel like, 15, 20 years ago, where you didn't expect your first round, even a first round quarterback, to come in and play right away. And I feel like we're going back towards that. Of course, the tricky part is, unless you draft a guy in the first round, you know, if you draft him later, you get him for 4 years. If you get him in the first round, you get that fifth year option, so you get a little more time to work with him. But I feel like everyone sort of has to rethink the way they approach, I don't know, quarterback expectations.
And the complicating factor is job security. It's never been great in the NFL, but that factors in here. Like the Jets, for example, Todd Bowles is probably on the hot seat. Now, should he be is a different discussion. Probably, I don't think he should be, because he's only been there, what, two seasons now, so he's heading into his third season. But he has to take that into consideration. So can you afford to risk going through the growing pains with a young quarterback? The other thing to keep in mind, Gary, like, look at the Hackenberg example. It's one thing to have a theory about how this is going to go, but then the patience to let the theory play out. So you tell the fans, not that the fans really should matter in any decision making, but they, you know, let's say they do. You tell the fans this guy's a developmental guy, is going to take 2 or 3 years. In springtime, right after the draft, you go, oh yeah, good, good looking ahead, we're fine with that. Then you get to November when you're 3-7. And he's not playing, and you forget all about. Nothing has changed with Hackenberg. He remains a developmental guy in his first season. Just because you're losing doesn't mean he should have his development accelerated. If he could play, they would have put him on the field. So the whole – people just don't have the patience anymore for stuff. And it goes back – remember last week we talked about how valuable it is to have a stable organization coaches that don't get fired, for example,
yep.
That you keep the same coaching staff in place, because there's no right or wrong scheme in the NFL. There are just different schemes. And the longer you can install your scheme within the same team, the better you become at developing players, because now you get highly specialized. You know exactly what you need. You're drafting guys that are better fits to begin with. Everybody's more experienced with the scheme. So that's that gets overlooked, and it gets back to the coaches and how many of them actually have time to establish a full program in the NFL, because all of that correlates to the way you develop players.
Yeah, and look, San Francisco 49ers, they gave Kyle Shanahan a six-year deal and John Lynch a six-year deal, so they will presumably have a chance to put their program in and to develop some young guys. I mean, this is another team. They're sort of in the same boat as the Browns right now. It's a full rebuild. You know, they maybe won't go about it the same way the Browns are going about it right now, but they need a little bit of anything, a little bit of everything. So I guess I'll ask the same question I asked about the Browns, Andy. When you look at the 49ers, what is good about the 49ers? What do you look at and say, like, okay, well, this is what you can work with right now?
Well, the head coach, for one, Shanahan,
yeah.
Because of what you just said, we don't know how he'll be as a head coach. But as a schemer of football, he is the best in the league right now. He was so far and away the best offensive schemer last season. So I like that they gave him a six-year deal. That is a very big gamble, absolutely. But I think I agree with your point completely. Now you have a chance to at least develop exactly what Shanahan wants to do, and he has a very specific system, and you know that because look at the guys they've gone out and signed. They got guys who have been in the system before, or fit it drastically. They have no marquee free agents, maybe Pierre Garçon, who've been in the system before, mm-hmm. but everybody fits a role immediately, so they already know exactly what they're looking for. Well, the longer you can let Shanahan operate that way, the better his players will become eventually. You're going to start getting better players, cycling guys in and out. Your backups are going to get better practicing on the limited reps they do get, because those will translate to the next year because they're running the same stuff. So I would hope that six-year deal is real in the mind of Jed York. Now, I'm a little reluctant because I'm sure, what did Chip Kelly have? I'm sure he had a multi-year contract too. Mm-hmm. It seems like owners don't mind. It's almost like coaches aren't expensive enough, and owners don't mind having to pay two, maybe even three at once, head coaches, because they're always trying to find the right guy. So I would hope Shanahan's there for 5 years at least, and hopefully the whole 6 years.
No, I would say Bill Belichick was 5-13 at one point with the Patriots, and that was with a team that had won divisions in the lead up to that. I think Pete Carroll's last year, they were either 8-8 or 9-7. They weren't a bad team. And they clearly slid back in the first year under Belichick while he was installing his system. And you know, I had this argument with people about Rex Ryan. If you took that approach with Bill Belichick in 2000 and 2001, I mean, he would have been out of a job before they ever won any Super Bowls. So,
well, and even look at let's look at Pete Carroll. He's the example from the Jets and Patriots. But what about when he was in Seattle too? His first season there in 2010, they were 7-9. His second season, they were 7-9. They didn't fire him. He never went on the hot seat, never came close. They stayed the course, and eventually they started winning 11, 13, 12, 10 games the last couple years. So it takes time for all of this stuff to go into action. The best example of all of it is Ron Rivera. And if I were an NFL coach, I would do all I can to get Ron Rivera's story out there, because he was the guy in Carolina for so many years who was on the hot seat. I mean, every year he was on the hot seat. They changed nothing. They kept him. They kept Cam Newton, who was very inconsistent his first few seasons. They kept the same defensive scheme. They kept mostly the same coordinators. Certainly those new coordinators were running the same schemes. Everything remained the same, and all of a sudden the Panthers, who made no big acquisitions in 2015, they were the same team that had been put together a few years before. That team went 17-1 in its first 18 games and reached the Super Bowl. So teams that have a chance to get better within the context of how they play, they have an enormous advantage in the NFL, especially if the practice time remains reduced like this, because at least you're practicing the stuff you're going to be playing with in theory.
Yeah. And I'll just say, before we move on from the bottom of the barrel here, at least as far as last year's record and probably this year's records, the Browns with 49ers, if you're a young quarterback coming into one of those teams, those are a couple of good coaches to play for. And I'm not sure there are too many other coaches sort of towards the bottom of the league that you'd rather play for than Hugh Jackson and for Kyle Shanahan from a scheme standpoint.
You want coaches that are going to put you in position to succeed. And when Hugh Jackson was in Cincinnati, the ball was distributed a lot. A lot of guys had roles on that team. They had numbers. Atlanta last season, a lot of guys posted big numbers for them. It wasn't just Julio Jones. So ball distribution, that does matter in the NFL, and it's not a matter of the quarterback dropping back and making sure everybody feels good about getting the same number of passes thrown. It's about how you're presenting the offense, the formations you use, the matchups you try to create. And Shanahan, I thought, was, he was far and away the best in the NFL at that last season. Now, he won't be as good this year with – he doesn't have the players this year that he had in Atlanta. But that doesn't mean he's going to forget how to coach. So there'll be a happy medium that can be achieved, and that's better than the low that the Niners would have had without someone like that.
Yeah. All right, a real quick message for anyone with a job or a life or basically anything going on in their life that doesn't involve planning their next meal. You have to start doing HelloFresh. It's the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking more fun so you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. Each week, HelloFresh creates delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks short on time. Again, I mean, this stuff is idiot-proof. I can do it, and I'm usually not allowed to turn on the oven in my house because, you know, danger of fire. But, I mean, anyone can do this. HelloFresh delivers the food right to your doorstep. No having to run out to the grocery store or anything like that. Recyclable, insulated box. It's going to come in. The food is great. The quality is amazing, especially the vegetables. I mean, I couldn't believe it was basically the best stuff you'd pick out if you went to the grocery store. But shows up, great shape, great tasting. They employ 2 full-time registered dietitians. They have them on staff. They review every recipe. It's going to be a nutritionally balanced meal, so you're going to eat well. It's going to taste good. Best of all, it's now less than $10 per meal. That's ridiculous. It's the right price, right convenience. Again, anyone can do it. If I can do it, you can do it. You got to do it. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the code 1030. That's T-E-N-3-0. Again, that's HelloFresh.com. Enter the code 1030, T-E-N-3-0. You got to do it. All right, we just talked Ron Rivera, so let's talk some Carolina Panthers, who we just haven't really talked about them a whole lot this year because they didn't make a lot of noise in free agency. I should say during the season we talked about them plenty. But, you know, in the offseason, they didn't make a lot of noise in free agency. You know, this time last year, we had the Josh Norman drama. They loaded up on all these young cornerbacks who are promising. So it kind of looks like they can make a move here. They're not going to go 15-1, but they can challenge for that top spot. Can you go any deeper than simply looking at the team and saying, well, if Cam Newton plays like he did in 2015, they're great. And if he plays like he did in 2016, they're not very good.
Yeah, you can go deeper than that. The other factors with Carolina, and they correlate, this is a running offense, and Cam Newton has to be in a run-first offense because of the way he plays and what a threat he is running the ball, and then how good they are throwing deep. They are a deep to intermediate deep type of passing team. They're going to throw 15 yards downfield instead of 8. They don't spread out and get the ball out quickly very often. So when you throw deep, you usually throw deep out of your running formations because your running formations give you extra blockers to begin with, your running backs, your fullbacks, your tight ends. So they block and give you time to drop back and time for those deep routes to unfold. You often have play action involved. You're trying to influence linebackers and safeties with your run game, and those are the guys you attack through the air. That needs to be the nature of Carolina's passing attack. And they got away from that last season. Their passing attack did not come from their running game as much, and their running game was not as effective as it normally was. They played with 3 wide receivers more rather than 2 tight ends, which they did a lot. They still did it a lot, but it wasn't their foundation last season. So that's what they need to get back to. And Cam Newton, I think, will get better when you do that. If you're asking Cam Newton, though, to run a 3-receiver offense and drop back 50 times a game, he is an erratic player, and you're going to get the highs and lows that come with that. And usually in the NFL, highs and lows are not good enough. You need highs. So you have to put Newton in a position to be more of a complementary player. And then, Gary, their defense, it's a pass rush. If they have one, it's a great defense. If they don't have one, it's a defense that has a secondary that can get exposed. And that was very clear last season, not just on film, but even the statistics bared that out.
Well, you could see the secondary getting a little bit better. I mean, they had all those young corners in there last year. I'm not saying it's going to be a great secondary, but you figure it won't be a liability this year.
It won't, but any secondary becomes a liability if they have to cover past the duration of the play. If there's no pressure on a quarterback, it doesn't matter who's in your secondary most of the time. You're going to get beat, and especially if you're a zone defense, you can't play zone and hold up past the duration of the play. If the pass rush doesn't get home in 2.5 seconds, your zones naturally widen and break down. You just can't maintain a zone that way. So, and that's why they have young corners, Gary, and that's why they were comfortable playing them last year. If they were a man-to-man defense, they probably wouldn't have put Bradberry and Worley on the field together. But they're a zone defense, so they're not asking as much of those guys. They don't expect them to hold up in coverage as long, and that's how they play. So they're banking on their pass rush to always hide their secondary, and that's just their style. Look at Sean McDermott goes to Buffalo, and they all of a sudden they're not re-signing Stephon Gilmore. That's not a coincidence. And that scheme, which is going to be the Panthers' scheme there in Buffalo, you don't need great cornerbacks.
Well, when you look at this Carolina pass rush, I mean, what was the issue last year? I mean, they got a good year out of Quan Short. He'll be back, and you know they brought in. You know, I guess Julius Peppers will help out a little bit in a limited role. You got Charles Johnson. You got who else is there? Mario Addison.
Yep.
It should be a good group.
It should. I think they still need one more edge bender. I think Addison's pretty good off the edge. I don't think Peppers is that kind of guy anymore. I think he's more of a technician and a strong man, so to speak. He's better he played defensive tackle in the passing downs
last year for
Green Bay.
I was going to say, would you play him inside full time now, or as full time as he's going to play?
If he's, let's assume he's a nickel pass rusher, which I think that's what he'll be. Mm-hmm. I would play him full time inside then. If he's going to play defensive end, you could have him there on first and second down. And some third downs, but he's a better defensive tackle pass rusher now than a pure edge rushing defensive end. They really don't have that other guy. We could debate Charles Johnson if you want. Charles Johnson, to me, at times, he's a great symbol of this Panthers defensive line, in fact, because there are times where you think he is old and washed up. Then you look and he's only, I think, 30 years old, which I hope isn't washed up, because that's the same age I am. But he'll look great at other times. He'll look explosive and nimble, and you don't know what you're getting from him each week. And he's an individual pass rusher. These guys win, for the most part, one-on-one. They're a schemed pass rush. They'll do stunts and twists. But overall, they're counting on winning with these guys. They're not counting on winning with their scheme as much. And I don't know what the reason was, Gary. It was stark, though. Last year, there were games where they looked every bit like the Panthers we know, and they were dominant on defense and dominant with that pass rush. And then there were games where they just totally disappeared, and that's when they got beat. And it was – I don't think they could give you – I know they can't give you a good answer, because I spent time with their coaches a few months ago and asked them about it. You don't have an answer for that kind of thing. But – they should be better than they were last season. I think if they're going to average back to the mean is their mean is better than most people's mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's stay with the same type of system here. Let's follow Greg McDermott up to, excuse me, Sean McDermott. This is not basketball. Let's follow Sean McDermott up to Buffalo. It's a completely remade defense here. Gosh, I keep on looking at it, and I don't know. You figure you get a better year out of Marcell Dareus. Does Kyle Williams give you what he gave you last year at this stage of his career? I mean, can you count on that anymore? Does Jerry Hughes? I mean, maybe Jerry Hughes is the guy who ends up sort of bouncing back in this system.
I would expect him to be that guy, because he's very good as a 4-3 defensive end. He's the guy Carolina needs, for example, that we were talking about. You need a true edge-bending speed rusher. I like Jerry Hughes, and I like his redirect inside moves. I think he's very good at setting up blockers to the outside and beating them across their face back to the inside. My overall sense here is they don't quite have the personnel to fit what they want to do this year. They don't have true 4-3 personnel there. We don't know what Reggie Ragland will be at linebacker. I don't see where Lorenzo Alexander fits in the system at all. And Ramon Humbar is the other linebacker in the mix, maybe Preston Brown. So they're not playmaking linebackers that we know of. And their defensive line, Hughes is good. Kyle Williams, I have trouble counting him out. He's one of the, some of those guys that just, they never are bad. They're good no matter how beat up they seem. And he's kind of been one of those guys. Remember, Gary, were you there on the trip to Buffalo that we took a few years ago? You were there, yeah. It was the MMQB
retreat.
Yeah,
I'm always in Buffalo.
Yeah, that's right. Of course you were there. Remember they said Kyle Williams was their best athlete on the team?
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that would fascinate some people, but he's a much better athlete than he appears to be. And they weren't kidding either. They gave examples. He is their best all-around athlete. He just has one of the uglier bodies on the team.
Yeah, the story was, what, he won the home run derby when they went up to Toronto, or maybe they did it at the Bisons game or something like that. And he had, who was it? He beat someone in a swimming race. Someone challenged him to a swimming race, and he, like, completely smoked everyone.
Yeah, and he can just throw a ball really well. Just, you know, pick something up and throw it, which is kind of like the fundamentals. That and running are like the baseline of athleticism.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's what. And before the Blue Jays game or wherever I can't remember if it was a Blue Jays game or it was the AAA team down there, the Buffalo Bisons, but they were all sort of like, I don't know, I don't want to say getting hammered, but they partook in some beverages before they went to the game, and then. Because he had won the home run derby, Williams got to go out there and throw the first pitch, and he just, like, fired a fastball.
Yeah. He'll probably be one of those guys when he retires that loses 50 pounds all, like, the first year out of the game, and you won't recognize him when he's walking around.
Yeah.
He's not a natural fat guy. But do you play with him? Is he a gap shooter within the context of this scheme? Can he be Star Lotulelei or Kawan Short? And that, I'm not going to bet against him. I think Darius is more the question mark because the talent's better than Williams, but the output can be all over the map.
I mean, it's like he's the one guy. Now that Gilmore's gone, he's like, I guess Sammy Watkins too, but, you know, what are you going to count on from Watkins at this point? But Darius is the one guy that they really, I mean, they gave him the second contract. They kept him around, and man, that has just been a shoot yourself in the foot type of move at this point.
And then the guy we haven't touched on, Shaq Lawson, and he's the interesting one because if he can't contribute, if he can't be a difference maker for them, then they're short at least one body. I mean, they don't have a lot of depth along their defensive line to begin with. And now they're short an edge rusher there. And when I watch Lawson, it's early still, but I don't see a true edge bender. I see more of – there's another guy that's going to have to rely on technique and be a polished player, and he's not quite that at this stage of his career. He's only played half a season in the NFL. So that's what I mean when I say I'm not sure Buffalo – I mean, we have a lot of questions we've just gone over. Some, you know, hey, he can kind of play. We think he's going to fit, but we don't know for sure. So I would imagine the Bills will address this in the draft. The only problem is they have dire needs at wide receiver, and I don't think they can let those go ignored on offense. The rest of their offense is set, though.
When, you know, I mean, it's going to be Tyrod again. I don't want to say, like, you know, does he need receivers? But it's like, if you're going to go super run-based again, and granted, they'll probably skew a little more towards, sort of that Dennison Kubiak type of offense than they did with the sort of more creative running stuff under Roman and Lynn. But I don't know. How desperate does the need at receiver become?
I think it's bigger with Tyrod because he is not an anticipation passer, and that's not debatable. Don't Bills fans should not get sensitive about that. It is no question he's not an anticipation passer. That's just a style of play thing. Now with him, it's also he's not great at reading coverages quickly. So you have to, if you're going to. You can't win with scheme is the problem with that. If you're not an anticipation passer, it's harder to build route combinations into your offense because the quarterback's not going to anticipate when those routes come open on time. You have to be able to play on time in order to scheme your offense. So if you don't scheme the offense, you're counting on guys to win one-on-one, counting on them to win individually, and that's where the Bills are going to struggle. They only have one guy in the passing game who can do that right now, and that's Sammy Watkins. Maybe Charles Clay, but he's probably more of a puzzle piece player. So that's why I think they need wide receivers, because you have to isolate everything for Tyrod Taylor. It's his style of play. He's not going to play on time. So you have to have guys that can get open in isolation.
Yeah. Last team to touch on here, and I think I want to jump back on the Chicago Bears playoff bound bandwagon. I might just do that every year until they make the playoffs.
Yeah, you did that last year. That's right. I forgot that. You know what? I'm with you on the Bears. I'm not going to say they're a playoff team, but that's not a hot take to me. That's a legitimate conversation.
Should I say Super Bowl then? So it's hot enough?
Yeah, you better do. Yeah, because then we can put in the subheading, which now,
Mark Sanchez put him over the top.
Yeah. Well, that's a good defense there in Chicago. Multiple coordinators or defensive coaches around the NFL have told me that's one of the league's 10 best defenses without question. And it's a better defense on paper now than it was a year ago. There's a team that's been in the same system for a little while now. Vic Fangio's been the coordinator two seasons, going on his third season. So you would assume some other guys who have been there now are going to get better within the context of that scheme. The question is on offense, Gary, and when you look at their receiving core, have you ever seen such a rich collection of just possession-type wide receivers and no downfield option? They got like seven guys who are all the same player.
They make him in a factory there. Somewhere in the bowels of Soldier Field.
And we might as well list these guys for people. So they signed Kendall Wright in the offseason. He's a possession slot receiver, and he has to be in the slot. That's where he plays. Eddie Royal is another guy that has to be in the slot. So now you've got two of those. Kevin White, we don't know about. We'll set him aside for a little bit. Marcus Wheaton from Pittsburgh, not a vertical threat. Not slow, but not a vertical threat. So he's a guy you scheme on the outside. Cameron Meredith, the exact same type of player, a guy you scheme on the outside. Reuben Randall, who probably won't make the team, but remember him with the Giants. He was almost always running post patterns and fly routes on the perimeter of the field. Who am I forgetting? Josh Bellamy, Deontay Thompson. They're the same type of receiver across the board. I'm just curious to see how they're going to play with that. A lot hinges on Kevin White. They need him to become a true number one, and that's not a position you want to be in, given that White has not been on the field basically for his first two seasons.
I was going to say, it's limited tape, but what's your sense of White right now?
He looked very slow last year, and you hope that's an injury factor. You hope he wasn't healthy, because if that's how he runs, he's not going to last. He won't be an NFL backup. So he has to play quicker. Maybe that's an inexperience factor as well. You play faster when you know what you're doing. He's brand new to the field. He hadn't been healthy. He probably didn't quite know what he was doing.
That was my take on him. He looked completely confused. He looked overwhelmed mentally.
And that's how you play slow. So this is a big offseason for Kevin White. You could argue his offseason is as important to the Bears as any non-quarterback's offseason is to any NFL team this year.
But I do. I love the offensive line, and I love Jordan Howard. I actually really like Jeremy Langford a lot, too. But I think this line is potentially one of the five or six best in the NFL this year. And I think Howard's a borderline star coming out of the backfield.
He's a very good zone runner, inside zone and outside zone. And if you're going to be a zone-blocking offensive line, you need some athleticism, and they have that right in the middle of their line with Josh Sitton, Cody Whitehair, and Kyle Long. Those are their guards and their center. And I'm with you on that. I'm eager to see what Howard does in year two. I think he's, within the way they play and what they ask him to do, he's easily a top 10 running back, maybe top 5 in the NFL.
I like it. I like those Super Bowl-bound Chicago Bears. Andy.
All right, yeah, I hear you.
On that note, that's going to be a wrap. I think that's a perfect way to end it. A disappointed sigh, and I hear you from Andy Benoit. But thank you, as always, to producer Matt Havia and editor Chris Basil, the guys at Digital Media making us sound so good. Most of all, thank you guys for listening to this episode of the MMPB 10 Things podcast. We're going to fit in a mailbag or two in the next couple of weeks. If you have like draft needs, questions, or something like that, really any questions. I mean, I think we've proven we will answer basically anything you ask at this point. If you have something about, 700-pound running backs or something like that, that's something we should probably cover on this show. But send them in, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI, if you are on Twitter, if you're on Facebook. We're both on there. Just look for our names, and also talkback@themmqb.com, or write us a nice letter. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.